These recordings of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein are provided courtesy of Congregation Ne'er Yisrael in London, where they were originally delivered.
Parsha this week, in fact, one might go so far as to say, in the opening letter of our Parsha this week, is the subject of much discussion. Ze'ele hamishpotim asher tosim lifnehem. Translated as, and these are the judgments which you shall place before them. Rashi makes the following observation. Ve'ele ha-mishpotim, kol mokom shene'emar ele, whenever an event or a statement in Torah begins with the word ele, posal es harishonim. It comes to indicate that what went before is being, as it were, excluded. Ve'ele, but when an event or a statement begins with the word ve'ele, mosif al horishonim, it comes to indicate that what is to follow is included in what went before. And in this case, the ve'ele in ve'ele hamishpotim, says Rashi, comes to indicate ma horishonim misinai af elu misinai. Literally translated as, in the same way as what went before was given from Sinai, so also what is to follow was given on Sinai. Then Rashi raises another topic. The Lama Nismecha Parshas Dinin Le Parshas Mizbeach. And why is the Parsha concerning judges and judgment placed next to the Parsha of Mizbeach with which last week's Parsha concluded? Rashi, Loma Lecha, to tell you, Shetosim Sanhedrin Eitzel Hamigdosh. Or others have the Girsa, Shetosim Sanhedrin Eitzel Hamizbeach. That the Sanhedrin, when they sit in the Lishka Tzagozis, it is to be positioned next to the Mizbeach. Now, what we have here is a Rashi with any number of questions. Number one, whenever Rashi raises the question of Lomo Nismecho Parsha Zulizu, it is usually a question which is raised in its own right. Rashi doesn't raise it in its own right here. Rashi makes a comment regarding the word ve'ele, and then raises the question, lomo nismecho. That's number one. Number two, on a superficial level, it would appear from Rashi's comment that were it not from the fact that ve'ele begins with a vav, indicating that what is to follow is joined thematically with what went before, we would not have known that these mishpotim are in fact Mishinai. And this has raised a number of rabbinic eyebrows, because Rashi himself, at the beginning of Parshas Behar, the famous Rashi, why does the Ma Inyan Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai? Why introduce the laws of Shemitah by announcing that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu Bahar Sinai to tell you, says Rashi, in the same way as the Shemitah, not only its general principles, but all its particular details were given from Sinai, so it is with the entire Torah. So therefore it would appear that Rashi's Shita is that all the Klolim, all the Protim, all the Diktukim of every single Mitzvah were given on Sinai. So why, therefore, does Rashi need the Eile, the Vav, to indicate that this is the case regarding Mishpatim? Even if we to suggest that the statement which Rashi makes at the beginning of Parshas Bahar is according to the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, and the Eile is according to the Shita of Rabbi Yishmoel, who insists that only the Klolim of Mitzvot were given on Har Sinai, but the Meforeshei Rashi insists that Rashi has to be a consistent Mefarish. If he's Mefarish at the beginning of Bahar, according to Rabbi Akiva, then it surely, whatever he says elsewhere, must be consistent with that particular point of view. And I've chosen this evening an answer, or more correctly, an analysis of this Rashi, which embraces all the problems that we have mentioned, from the Bartanura. Bartanura, as many of you will know, more famous for his commentary on the Mishnayos than for his comments on the Torah, and certainly one of the most extraordinary personalities of his particular era. And if you want to read something which is both informative and beautiful at the same time, I do heartily recommend the English translation of the Sophonos story of his travels from Italy to Eretz Yisroel. Something very, very beautiful. I think it's called Pathways to Jerusalem or something of that order. Something most elevating. Be that as it may. Says the Bartanura, Ma horishoni mi Sinai af elu mi Sinai. Says the Bartanura, Sorech liyashev, we need to investigate. Amai itzlich avov. Why do we need the vav? Lomar, to inform us, de elu nemru mi Sinai, that these were also said from Sinai. Shome inenle, do we not know this fact? Mimad chesiv gavei shmita, from what is said regarding shmita vayedaber Hashem el Moshe bahar Sinai, and Rashi himself says there, quoting the Torah's Kohanim, ma inen shmita lahar Sinai, elamar shmita nemru kloloseh v'dikto keha mi Sinai, etc., etc. Says the Bartanura, I understand the pshat in Rashi as follows. Ein achinami, that the laws which are mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim were given on Sinai, that we know, says Rashi, from what I mentioned in Parshas Bahar. The Vav of the Eile is coming to tell us a new item of information that we would not have known. V'nuchal l'farish, therefore we interpret as follows. The hocha that here, ritzono lomar, that what Rashi says, the Vav informs us is as follows. Shenemru lo elo hadinim shebezois haparsha, that the dinim which are mentioned in Mishpatim were mentioned Beth Sinai, not only on Mount Sinai, but kodem rideto min hohor takef achar asteres hatibrus. All that is mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim that is following now, not only was it says on Sinai, but it actually followed on directly on the Aseres HaDibros before Moshe Rabbeinu actually left to go down the mountain. Avol, however, Kol Sha'ar HaMitzvos, all the other mitzvos, Nemru, were said Ba'aloso El Hohor, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up on another occasion, Lekabel HaLuchos, to receive the Luchos, the 40 days that he spent on the mountain. So therefore we have to know, says the Bartanura, there are two themes. The idea that every mitzvah in the Torah has its origins on Sinai, that is Shittas Rabbi Akiva, and that is the Shitta which Rashi adopts, as is confirmed by his comments at the beginning of Parshas Bahar. The Vav in Ve'elah HaMishpatim is coming to tell us that they were said at a time when the Aseret HaDibros had been concluded, and prior to Moshe Rabbeinu's descent from the mountain. That is what Ve'elah is. Now, having absorbed that piece of information, we move on further. Rashi says, V'lomonis mecho parshas dinim l'parshas mizbeach. So the Bartanura again raises the following question, Korsha, that in itself is difficult to understand. Mahu zeh sheshoein? Why would the Rashi ask, L'omonis mecho? Why is this put next to this? Atu b'chol mokom yikshe l'chol l'omonis mecho parshas zu lezu? Does Rashi ask as he goes through the Torah, why is this parsha put next to the other one? Rashi doesn't raise this question on every occasion, because it's not a legitimate question on all occasions. The fact of the matter is, that's the way the Torah is ordered, and therefore there is no kasha. So why does Rashi feel there is a question here, lomo nismuch? Elo dehochi koshelo. But the answer to our question is as follows. Rashi has a problem of lomo nismucho by virtue of how he has interpreted the Vav in Ve'ele HaMishpatim. Me'achar she'havav shel Ve'ele Mosif al Horishonim lahoros she'af elu mi'Sinai. Since we now know that the Vav comes to indicate not that the Parshios of Mishpatim were given on Har Sinai, but that they were given at the same time as the Aseret HaDibros before Moshe Rabbeinu went down from the mountain, because otherwise the Vav would not be necessary, Rashi Lishit also. So if in fact we have confirmed through the Vav of the Eile that all these inyanim in Parshas Mishpatim were said before Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, is if so, Lomo Nismecho Parshas Dinim LeParshas Mizbeach, so why did we make an interruption? Why did we conclude Moshe Rabbeinu came down, and this, the Inyan of the Mizbeach, And then we need the Ve'ela in order to remind us that in fact these particular Inyanim in Mishpatim belong chronologically to an earlier point in the Torah. Lama hitzik beparchas mizbeach v'yemse tein aseret adiblus leve'ela hamishpotim havelei loma parchas v'yela hamishpotim teichev achar aseret adiblus shekosov v'hen after which it is written v'yela before which it is written v'yela d'Hashem al har Sinai. And then had they been written prior to Moshe Rabbeinu's descent, then the Ve'ela would have been even more crystal clear, because it would be mostly following Shonim, leaving no doubts in our minds that Ve'ela means that these are likewise being delivered to Moshe Rabbeinu as he stands on the mountain to receive the Aseres HaDibros. But now, Lomo Hilsik Ho'inyin Beparshat Mizbeach. So now the kashas, as Rashi is, since I know that chronologically the Mishpatim are joined to the Aseres HaDibros, so why were they mafsik with the Inyan of the Mizbeach? Elo lahashmiacha shetosim Sanhedrin, if not, says Rashi, to inform us that we should place our Sanhedrin next to the Mizbeach in the Beis Hamikdash. So the logic goes like this. Since Ve'ele has established that the Mishpatim, which are mentioned in this parsha, are in fact told to Moshe Rabbeinu immediately following the Aseres HaDibros, that being the case, why were we mafsik with the Inyan of the Mizbeach, which at best, it is unclear whether it was said while Moshe Rabbeinu was still on the mountain, and more than likely said after he came down? The answer is that the Torah deliberately separated the Aseret HaDibros from the Ve'ela HaMishpatim and inserted Mizbeach in between, because as we have mentioned on many occasions, the Torah sees fit not to preserve the chronological order of events when there is some important message that has to be delivered. Sometimes the message is of a Musar quality, like asking us why the Parsha of Miriam is placed next to the Parsha of Meraglim in regards to Lashon Hara, and sometimes the Smichus Parshiot is of a halachic nature, namely to tell you that you have to put the Sanhedrin in next to the Mizbeach on the site of the Beis Hamikdash. So that's the ball. Now we come to the word lifnehem, which you shall place before them. Says Rashi on the word lifnehem, velo lifnei ovdei kochavim umazolos. It would appear, says Rashi, that ve'ela hamishpatim asher tosim lifnehem is an exhortation that you are to place any case between Jews in front of Jews, not in front of non-Jews. Now here, just to mention one or two thoughts which might not be so well known. The Riva, one of the Baalei HaTosfos, raises a most fascinating question. And he says, if you look into the Gemara in Kiddushin, at the end of Meseches Kiddushin, you will discover that we are forbidden even to appoint a geir as a dayan over us. So therefore, asks the Riva, if, according to Chazal, and they learn it out from Pesukim, if we are forbidden even to have a geir as a dayan, it's doch kal v'chomer that we're not supposed to have a goy as a dayan to take our cases to goyim. So why do we need to have lifnei hem v'lo lifnei ovdei kochavim? And the Rivo answers as follows. There is a difference between the prohibition of bringing our cases to geirim as dayanim and bringing our cases to goyim. In the case of geirim, the prohibition is only if there are people who are Yisroelim proper, who are of similar stature and quite capable of administering justice in this particular case. If that is so, one should not bring the case to Geirim, since there are Yisroelim who are quite efficient and quite capable of deciding in this case. If, however, there are no Yisroelim who are as capable as these Geirim, then the prohibition against Geirim does not apply. However, even if there are Goyim who know even better than Yisroelim, one is not allowed to bring a case before non-Jewish Goyim, before non-Jewish judges. So therefore, there is a distinction, says the Rivo, and he brings the answer in the name of the Smag, Rav Moshe Mikusi, that whereas with Gairim, if there are no Yisraelim proper, to use the word advisedly, who are able to judge in a similar competent style to Gairim, then the Gairim can be employed. Or Raya, the proof being, he says, is it not well known that Shemaiah and Abtalion were themselves Gairim, and they were elevated to the highest positions in the land? As we know, one was the Rosh HaSanhedrin and the other was the Av Beis Din. We find them prominently displayed in Pirkei Avos, etc. However, says the Samag, since there was no one quite capable as they were, so therefore they were elevated, because the Isser of appointing Gairim to positions is only when there are Yitzhuelim who are similarly capable. There are other suggestions made in regards to the difference between Gairim and Goyim. Another answer is found in the Sama, the Sefer Me'iros Einayim on Choshen Mishpat. And he says as follows, in regards to Gairim, if two Jews will decide that they are quite willing to bring their case to Gairim and to abide by their decisions, then if there is a Haskama, there is an agreement between both parties to subject themselves to the rulings of these Gairim, then their judgment is A, permitted, and their judgment is binding. In the case of Goyim, if two Jews will agree to be bound by the rulings of Goyim, the prohibition against bringing a case to Goyim still applies. Since I have raised the question of Shemaiah and Avtalion, it might be interesting to note that there is a famous comment of Rabbi Yonis and Aibishud Zatzal in his magnum opus Urim Vitumim on Choshen Mishpat. He suggests there, quite interestingly, the following suggestion, that the prohibition against appointing Gairim to the Beis Din is when the appointment is made by the Jewish authorities. Jewish authorities are not allowed to appoint Gairim. When it's a Maisa Beis Din, it's done as part of a Judaic process itself. But he suggests that Shemaiah and Avtalion were not appointed through the normal process. They were appointed by the Malchei Chashmonoim. They were appointed Midin Malchut. And without going into the various ramifications, we know that there are certain areas in which the king has, from a halakhic point of view, every right to legislate. That is the famous Droshos Horan regarding the rabbis who are responsible, as it were, for the religious life, and the king who is responsible for the administration of other areas, economic, social, etc. And Rabbi Yonatan Aivishud suggests that the appointment of Shemaiah and Avtalion was never made according to the Shulchan Aruch, as it were. It was an appointment which was made by kings because they decided that they were the two most capable people to be involved in the particular areas that were their responsibility. So much for this year on the first pasuk. Let us now have a look at the second pasuk. There's quite a fascinating item of information which emerges. Something which it serves to remind me, and I hope serves to remind you, that we go through various psukim and we are so used to seeing them that many times, because we are so accustomed, we are not alive to the nuances. And here we have a most beautiful observation by the Sefer which I brought some weeks ago, this newly issued Sefer by Rabbi Yochanan Luria, the Meshivas Nofesh. And he writes as follows. Let me just say the question open, and then we'll have a look at his very brief comment. Ki Siknah Eved Ivri, which translated into the vernacular, leaving aside ancient English, when you will buy a Hebrew slave. Now, obviously, it is the Torah. And the Torah is speaking to you and to me. So therefore, the use of the second person is quite appropriate. Ki Siknah Eved Ivri, when you purchase a Hebrew slave. However, when we go down to the second din under discussion, namely the Omo Ho'ivrio in Pasuk Zion, much to our surprise, we change into the third person. V'chi yimkor ish esbito le'omo. And if one will sell his daughter as a slave, for want of a better expression. So we've moved from the second person into the third person. V'halo dovoru. It's something worthwhile commenting on. Says the Meshivas Nofesh, which you find under the Bertanura, Yesh litain alev. It is worthwhile directing our attention to the following phenomenon. Shebekan midaber benochach, then it, when it comes to dealing with an Eved Ivri, it speaks in the second person. Usha'ar mikroos, but the rest of the psukim, midabrim beloshonista, speak in the third person. Kamo, for instance, v'chiyim kor ish espito, if he will sell, if a man will sell his daughter, if a man will dig a pit, if men will strive, if a man will give to his friend. So all of a sudden we've said goodbye to the second person and we've welcomed the third person. Says the Meshivas Nefesh, and this shows you the difference between Torah and Chochmah. Torah is the presentation of material through different eyes and with different sensitivities than one finds anywhere else. Chochmah be'edom, tamin, Torah be'edom, alt. Why here second person and later on third person? V'nira li, and it appears to me, Shehakodesh Baruch Hu midakdeik lidaber beloshon nochach v'devarim she'ein puranos liyadam kegon kisikne. Hakodesh Baruch Hu, whenever he speaks about a situation which may crop up, where the situation per se does not represent a tragedy or catastrophic circumstance in the life of the individual, then Hakodesh Baruch Hu speaks to you. If somebody steals from you and he hasn't got the money to pay and the situation arises whereby you come to buy, that doesn't in any way imply that something tragic has happened in your life. So therefore the second person is used. I will call Puranus. But whenever a certain halacha is associated with a situation which arises to which you and I do not look forward to, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not say to us, when you know why? Because Beris Kerusa Lisvasayim, because there is a covenant made with the lips, or as we say in the phraseology, don't tempt fate, or Al Tiftach Pele Sotin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not say to you, when you sell your daughter as a slave, Matonus Nitzav. Therefore it's Bechiyim Kor Ish, if one. The Alkane, and therefore that's something else that we have to take from the Parsha. The Parsha is not telling you only what happens when you sell your daughter. The Parsha is not only telling you what happens when you buy a Hebrew slave. The Torah is telling you how to speak. That's a different matter altogether. That's what they call a subliminal theme. Bilal Cain, and therefore Yilmod Adam Shalola Hatkir Lachavero Shum Puranos Benochach Apilu Al Tanai. And therefore a person should never say to his friend something which will be of tragic consequences for him, even if he only mentions it as what will happen if he does or does not do something. One should never say these things. And many people do not realize that all that goes on with the so-called open, broad-minded rabbis who say to their elam, you can stay in for Yizkor. One of the main reasons why, we're not going to get to the halacha, it's not a halacha shir, but one of the reasons which is suggested as to why people who, Baruch Hashem, do not have to recite Yizkor should go out, because hearing everybody recite it, and forgetting for one moment what it is all about, they may inadvertently recite the Yizkor prayer and Beris Kerus Olisvot. One of the main reasons why we don't speak, why those who are not obligated, people don't realize. Beris Kerus Olisvot Hayim. That is why Chazal say, regarding Motzi Shemra, there are three people who suffer. There are the people who say it, the people who listen, and the people about whom it's said. Everybody asks the question. I can understand the person who says it. He should come to a bad end. And the people who listen, also because they're listening in. Oh, but what is there, Shuldik? You spoke about him. Undeserved, blush and horror. The answer is, what happens to him is not punished. What happens to him of whom blush and horror is spoke? It's because Beris Kerusa Lisvasayim. Because Lashon Hara is damaged. That's what it's all about. Loshen Hori is the tongue damages for this Caruso-less society. That is why I once suggested that the din of sending out a leper, the chutzlo'ir, only applies when you're living in a walled city. And I once asked, why does a leper, Dafka, have to be sent out only from a walled city? And I suggest very simply, why would a person want to live in a walled city, lechatchila? Why isn't he happy with what they used to call in my youth the wide open spaces? What does he want a walled city for? The answer is, he comes into the walled city for protection. He spoke Loshen Hora against someone, that's why he was struck down with leprosy, and against Loshen Hora there is no protection. So he who came in for protection and damaged another person who had no opportunity to be protected, he has to be sent outside the walled cities and to show what it means to live without protection. So the leper outside the city is as safe from the elements as a person inside the walled city is safe from Loshen Hora. It's an interesting equation. We go further. Ki sikne, we're really racing through. Ki sikne eved ivri. When you buy an eved ivri, here we come to a most fascinating observation by a gentleman whom we are wont to quote now and again, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's all. And he is fascinated by this particular term, ivri, which he notes is found almost exclusively, halachically speaking, associated with the slave. Let's have a look. We're not going to go through the entire item, but just to pick out the Rosh Eprok. Yesh Levayer, says the Emes Liyakov as follows. It is worthwhile investigating. Madua nikrokan eved Yisroeli b'shem eved ivri. Why is the Jewish slave, because he is a Jewish slave, why is he called an eved ivri? The Chayba Mishnah Torah, and likewise in Devarim, it says, Ki imocher lecha hochicha ho ivri, ho ivriya, if your brother, who is an ivri or an ivriya, will be sold to you. And likewise in Sefer Yirmiyah, we are told, V'shalach ish es avdo v'yish es shifchoso, ho ivri v'ho ivriya. Why are they called ivri and ivriya? Why is that a phrase which is retained in regards to a slave, Jewish, both male and female? So he writes as follows. It appears to me that one may approach this problem by looking into what the Ibn Ezra says on the word Ivri. And he writes like this. There is no doubt in my mind, says the Ibn Ezra, that when we call Avram, Avram ho Ivri in Sefer Bereishis, it means he is Mibnei Aver. It means he is descended from that man Aver. As it says in the Pasuk, Avi kol b'nei Eivor, etc., v'hainu. And what do we mean when we say Abraham is from b'nei Eivor and is called Abraham o Ivri? So he says like this, v'hainu it means, she'eivor hu she'yisad beis ha-medrash. Eivor, we know there was a yeshiva of Shevo Eivor. Eivor founded a beis ha-medrash, a college. Call it a college nowadays, it sounds more impressive. Then he made sham es ikre ho'emuna, and he taught there the basic tenets of faith. Avol, of course, we know at the time when Eber started the yeshiva, it was rak hayechidim shabo leves midrasho kibulu toroso. It was only for isolated individuals who came to sit at his feet. What happened when Avram Avinu came along? Mashen came avos koru b'shem Hashem. The ancestors, the avos, the patriarchs, they came and they started to call on the name of Hashem and they publicized. And more people came to Avram, and he was mefarsim, the Torah of Eber. How do I know that what was taught in the yeshiva of Eber and what Avraham Avinu taught are one and the same? Because we know that when Yaakov Avinu went away from his father's house, he went to study at the yeshiva of Shevo Eber, as we mentioned at the end of Parshas Toledos. And if he went from the yeshiva of his father Yitzchak to learn in the yeshiva of Shevo Eber, you can rest assured that there was no stira. There was no contradiction between what he hoped to learn there and what he had learned up to that time. Now, so therefore, in the ancient world, an Ivri was a person who subscribed to the tenets of the Beis HaMedrash of Eber. That's who he was. He was an Ivriite, if we want to coin the phrase. Now let us consider, what is this word Ivri? What does it represent? You have a number of people who are gathering together, and what are they bound by? They're not bound by territory. They're bound by ideology. Right? Shaharei kol elish in iskavetzu hayu anoshim me'umos shonos, umi mishpochos shonos, v'chulam yiched rak hadeyaho ivris. So what you had, therefore, at the time of Avraham Avinu, who perpetuated and promulgated the theories and the axioms which were present in the Beis HaMedrash of Eivir, these were people who came from all over. And all they had in common was not that they lived side by side, or not that they were part of a national unit, geographically speaking. They were the people who were joined by common ideology. So they all they had was a similar lifestyle. All they had in common was the ideology. Now, let me just go on further, Balpeh, to explain what the Hoga. All they had in common was the ideology. Let me just go on further, Balpeh, to explain what Rabbi Yaakov suggests. Since originally, the Ivri people were a people who were not in any way based in any geographic location. They were not united by land. They were not united by territory. They were not united by tribal holdings. They were united by ideology. By extension, the name came to be applied to people who had nothing that they owned in life except ideology. It started out as people who are not in any way joined by land, and by extension it came to apply to people who had no land. Therefore, it became a pejorative. It became a word which was used only in a negative context. A wanderer, because originally those people who came to the Beis HaMedrash of Eivir were people who came, and irrespective of where their land was or whatever else, their association with Eivir was merely through something which was not grounded in anything which they owned, and therefore by extension came to be used to describe people who owned nothing. Therefore, when we speak about an Eved, about a person who and hasn't got the money to pay back, for which reason he is being sold, so an Eved, therefore, the way in which he is described is an Eved Ivri, a wanderer, a person with no substantial wealth. And in fact, we use the word, says Rabbi Yaakov. We find it used in a pejorative sense in Shmuel Aleph, when the Goyim said, Hinei Ivrim Yotzeim min Hachorim. Here they are, these Ivrim who are coming out of the woodwork, coming out of the hole. So this, says Rabbi Yaakov, is the reason, to my mind, why Ivri came to be associated with slaves. Again, not to repeat what I've said before, the idea that they have no land, because it came from a group of people whose associations were not based on land. Okay. As you know, the main body of Parshas Mishpatim is devoted to what we call civil law. And of course, our initial approach to the Parsha would be that many of these laws are in fact not in vogue, mainly because we do not have the Sanhedrin, etc. And therefore, the challenge is always to bring some light on the Parsha of Mishpatim to make the Parsha that much more relevant to ourselves. I mean, that really is the challenge. Not the Korobo Kol Yemei Chayav, as the Chasam Sofer says. Not that we should read it all the days of our life applying to the king, but rather that we should read into it all the days of our lives. It's a different bit. And in this regard, I have come across a most fascinating letter from the Chazon Ish Tzatzal. And when the history of the 20th century comes to be written, the Chazon Ish will certainly take his place amongst the most outstanding of rabbinic figures of the 20th century. The debt of gratitude that the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael owes to him is something that has not fully been assessed or appreciated, but something which will have to be, over a period of time, understood correctly. Certainly, despite his diminutive stature, for sure, Mishichbo v'malo govoa mikolovo. And he has many letters, and I came across this letter taken actually from volume 3, letter number 82. Don't know when these people had time to write letters, but that's the way it is. I say that advisedly. The Chazon Ish says, Ve'ein ha-sefer ko'eis tachas yodi. When he quotes a certain sefer, he says, the sefer is at the moment not to hand, which many people take to mean that the sefer is not in my library. And I have been told reliably that Ve'ein ha-sefer ko'eis tachas yodi, when it is used by the Chazon Ish, means that I am so weak from my learning that I haven't got the energy to stand up and get it down from the shelf. Ve'ein ha-sefer ko'eis tachas yodi. Something to remember. Says the Chazon Ish, Ka'ashel nisponein v'mabat chitzoni. You have to remember, apart from anything else, just while I've just said these few words, the Chazon Ish's language is poetical in the extreme. If any of you have the zechus to look into the sefer Ho'emuna v'habitochon, it is a sefer which is entirely poetic. The command of language is master. So the Chazon Ish makes the following observation in this letter. Ka'asher nisponein v'mabat chitzoni. When one looks at a superficial level, al hachayim al pi ha-Torah, in regards to life as it should be lived according to the Torah, motzinu emsoin yokor, we find a most wonderful means, lahargil midas hatovos b'chol ha'om, to inject midos tovos into the people, a well worthwhile ambition. What? To bring midos tovos into the people, I have a wonderful etzah. Al pi simas chok, by making it a general rule, lelamed lechol ha'om es toras ha-mishpotim v'ho'onshim shel kol ovel. By teaching young and old the judgments and the punishments for committing all types of wrong. Ba'asok ha-na'ar bi'onshe ha'ovel. When the young child busies himself in learning the punishments that are to be meted out to people who do all sorts of wrong, yuta bilibo es toavas ha'ovel, there will be implanted in his heart a detest of ovel. V'yeshachov lihisrachek mimenu, and it will also be planted in the heart of the child the duty to keep distant from that particular type of activity. And the beauty of this system is that you're doing it the ofankar, which I suppose we will translate as in a subtle way. Uvederech agav, en passant, bekinyan chozok. On the contrary, the less direct the approach is, the more it makes inroads into the heart. We've already explored that particular phenomenon through the writings of the Tel Zerov and the Be'er Yitzchok and Parshas Yisro and the Gaon in the Hakdoma to the Shmon Esser for Sholosh Vegon, sources which we have quoted in the past. So the more indirect, the more subtle, the more long-lasting it will be. How do we ensure that Midos Tovus will become part of the young person's personality? By learning the simple punishments that are meted out by the Torah to people who do all types of wrong. The Alpizer, and through this, Iker Simas Oonshim, the fact that the child is told the punishments, Yasu Esperi Pulosom, will ensure that they will do their work, Lini Koyon Hamidos, to cleanse the Midos of the individual. Soros Hoonish Hagodal Al Hoovel, because when one sees the tremendous punishments which have been meted out for the wrongdoer, Yakeh Shoresh B'chol Leib Ho'am, then that will plant roots into the heart of the individuals, L'ga'enes Hadover Ahi, to treat that activity as an abomination, U'yashashvo L'zorna, and to consider it as an alien act. The Jew doesn't do it. Milvad Yiras Ho'onish, apart from the fact that he will also be in fear of ever getting that punishment. So punishments as they are meted out by the Torah when we read them, they tell us the punishment. But they also, in their own subtle way, implant in our hearts and minds the fact that the Torah is telling us, as you do it. That's not how a Jew acts. There's the Chazon Ish. In Nimtza Pe'ula Soronish Begimel Derochim. So therefore we find that the mentioning of a punishment for a certain crime, the prescribed punishment, achieves three ends. A, Beyiras Onsho. A person is in fear of ever having to suffer such a punishment. Number two, Beyidias Ha'onish. We now know if a person does in fact infringe on it, the type of punishment that has to be meted out. So it's a practical statement. And thirdly, Belimud b'sefer ha'mishpotim is charitzas mishpoto. When we learn of the type of punishments that are meted out for certain types of activity, and who is going to punish us? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is full of chesed. And yet that same HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is so full of chesed, is prepared to come out in such a dramatic way against a person who performs that type of action. The gam belondo b'sefer shekulo chesed. And we see, nevertheless, that even though the Torah is kulo chesed, there are occasions, yotzei b'chasdo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes outside the middle of chesed, linto miyad, in order to take vengeance, may ovel v'chometz. So if HaKadosh Baruch mole chesed, is prepared to go out suddenly against the person who does these things, shema'orer bo lim'osh bora. Does this not arouse in ourselves the obvious conclusion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu abhors these type of activities? So there are two contrasting elements which constitute what it is that is stated in the Torah as punishment for the crime. To know what it is, so that we should be afraid to do so out of fear of incurring these punishments. But there is the ethical dimension. That these are activities which are so abhorred by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I don't need to tell you, the greater the punishment, the conclusion is that these are the ones which are most abhorred by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the Alpi Kolele, and bearing in mind all these insights, Hadovor Poshut, it is quite obvious, Shefok Onesh Nefesh Lahoreg Nefesh, that the mentioning of the death penalty in the Torah for the murderer, if understood correctly, mima'et es horetzicha, on the contrary, brings about a lessening of murder, umekayem harbe nefoshos, and brings about that more people will stay alive. Because the ethical dimension is to teach us the value of human life. If human life would not be so precious, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shekulo Chesed legislate in his Torah that the penalty for a murderer is that his own life, given to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the most precious commodity, has to be taken away from him? Ule'umat there, words which find a faint echo nowadays, and in contrast to that, Kishayiyya Hachot Kal Orotseyach, the easier the punishment that is meted out to the murderer is, Yakeshoresh Alpi Kol HaSholosh Eile, it will have its influences, it's sending out a signal. Lehokel Veleif Hoam Vechanichov Es Ovel Rotseach Nefesh. If the murderers of a six-year-old will be paroled inside 18 months, it is not saying that the punishment is too lenient. It is telling us that the message that is coming out from the highest judicial circles in the land is that human life is cheap. When a person gets put away for going bankrupt for longer than he gets put away for taking a life or two or three or ten, whether on the same ward or in a different ward, then the message that's going out is that we're living in a world where money is more valuable than life. Says the Chazon Ish, that's what it's all about. Punishments are there to tell you what the punishment is. And punishments are there to identify the degree to which that type of activity is alien to society and is to be abhorred. So therefore, when a person sees that the penalty for a murderer is not so great, so what happens? So you find that people start treating the crimes for which the punishment is so lenient, they start treating them as not crimes at all. Now there is a most fascinating insight by the Chazon Ish. I say it outside, and nevertheless worthwhile looking inside. The punishment for the death penalty, the punishment for the murderer, is the death penalty according to Torah. What does that say? It tells us that the taking of life is such a serious offense. That's from the ethical, subliminal point of view. And from the practical, halachic point of view, it is telling us that a person who murders another has to be put to death. Says the Chazon Ish, amongst the people of Israel, the subliminal message was the one that made the greatest impact more than the practical one. Proof being that members of the Sanhedrin were able to turn around and say that a Sanhedrin that kills one man in 70 years is called a blood-stained beast. And there is no contradiction. Because as much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to indicate through the death penalty, through its legislation, that human life is precious, that is not a contradiction to the efforts of a Sanhedrin to try and find some way whereby a person who is suspected of killing another may be through the system, may be saved through derisha, through hakira, through questioning. It's no contradiction. Because with every punishment there is a subliminal message. And on the contrary, says the Chazon Ish, from the fact that the Sanhedrin tried every which way to save the life of this man charged with the crime, in its own way, is sending out the same subliminal message as the Torah itself. Human life is precious. That is not the same as saying that the ninth, whatever it is, one day the punishment was so and so, and today the punishment is not. They tell a funny little story about the Yiddel who's leaving in Heathrow Airport, and they're asking him, are you leaving here? When did you first come here? He says, I came here in 1948. And he says, how long have you been in this country? He says, I've been in this country 70 years. He says, you don't like it? He says, I'm making a wonderful living. He says, lovely children, lovely family. So why are you leaving? He says, when I came here, he says, homosexuality was punishable by, if not the death penalty, by life imprisonment. Then a few years later, he says, the age of consent was introduced 21. It became legitimate. And then it was going down to 16, so that I'm leaving before it becomes compulsory. So what we're saying is not that we're changing the punishments. We're saying that there are two messages here. There is the death penalty which is legislated for the murderer, and that's a halachic pronouncement. What is the penalty? The penalty is the death penalty. And we don't have to blush when we say it, because we're amongst more enlightened people who have made our streets so safe. But then there is the subliminal message. The subliminal message is that every life is precious. That is a theme which goes hand in hand, and we go now to the Chazon Ish to indicate what I've said before. Umotzino, and we find in our history, that there are many times when the legislation of a penalty has achieved more on the subliminal level than it has actually achieved on a practical level. Until the rabbis, et Sanhedrin, hahoreges, achas, leshivim shono, etc. Umaniflo hadova. And how extraordinary it is when we direct our thoughts, lehachmir be'ikra ha'mishpat, that the rabbis were prepared to raise all types of stringencies as obstacles to inflicting the death penalty. The Ligdor be Ophane Hajarisha Vahakir of a Hotsoasadovana for Ulos. And they wanted to raise all types of questions and inbuilt contradictions so that the case would be found not to be sufficiently convincing. And the Gamze Poel Almidas Hamusari. And even those efforts were made all with the same idea in mind, to ensure that the respect for any life would be uppermost in our minds. Final paragraph. And it appears to me as a suggestion that because the legislation of punishment contains not only the legislation of what is to be meted out, but also by virtue of what is said, there is an indication of how this type of activity is to be abhorred. It could very well be that that is why the Torah says, Ayin tachas ayin. Ki hakavona, because to my mind, you know that it's not ayin tachas ayin. Chazal saying, al pi kavona, that it's be paid. But writing, ayin tachas ayin, is ki hakavona lelameda soonesh. Putting it in those forms, al pi apshat, as if the onesh was ayin tachas ayin, is lotas belev ha'om ha'ovel. Is in order to implant in our hearts what an abominable activity it is to take out another person's eye. Bilakavona hazos, and I believe that with that idea in mind, nochon lomar besigno nimrods, we can say the following. Kasher yomar Hashem yisporach, sheraui lichtov batora, ala mashchis ein re'ehu ayin tachas ayin. That when you and I look into this week's parsha, and we see staring us in the face, ayin tachas ayin, every onesh comes with two messages, what the punishment is, and the subliminal message of how abhorrent the activity is. The pshat has been put in that form so that the subliminal message should be as powerful as possible. We look into it and we see on chochmas, ayin tachas ayin. The subliminal message is, if a person takes another person's eye out, he has to have his eye taken out. Can you imagine what HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks of a person who takes another person's eye out? Then, with regards to the onesh, if it should ever come about, which we have shown, says the Chazon Ish, is a consideration which was not uppermost in people's minds. What was more important was the education of the laity and the education of all and sundry as to how HaKadosh Baruch Hu views the activities. From that point of view, it were more important that it should remain ayin tachas ayin, hapoel harbei, and those words will have great effect, al regish enushi, b'em soos rigishe kodesh v'rigishe kawem. My friends, this is a masterpiece, something well worth looking into again and again and again. Let me then conclude with a most fascinating observation on a posuk with which we are all familiar. And that is in Perek Kaf Gimel, posuk Zayin. Perek Kaf Gimel, posuk Zayin. Midavar Sheker Tirchok. Keep yourself distant from lies. And here I want to draw your attention to a most fascinating observation which is made by the Chasam Sofer in the Chumash. And he writes as follows. Debechol HaTorah, we have it here at the bottom just underneath the Chazon Ish. Debechol HaTorah, in the entire Torah I want to give you a parallel, says the Chasam Sofer. Heisha dechesiv lo saseh, wherever we are forbidden by the Torah not to do a certain type of activity, you should know, says the Chasam Sofer as a Klal Gadol, Asiyo Asuro Hagromo Shori. It comes to tell you that the Torah forbids you to do it, but if you don't actually do it, but you only bring it about, you sit back and let it happen, there's no Isser from the Torah. That's Gromo, a cause. as we find, for instance, in the Gemara Shabbos regarding Mechikas Hashem, the actual prohibition is to rub out Chas V'Shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And we find similar comments in Menachos. However, there is an exception. If you look at the beginning of Perek Shvuas Ha'edus in Gemara Shvuas, the Gemara brings there many items which we would consider to come under the heading of committing wrong in methods of judging. Lo sasa oval v'mishpot, or lo sa nevere achoed shoker. But the Gemara suggests that the various activities under discussion there are not prohibited because of lo sasa oval or lo sa nevere acho. Why? For example, if you know a certain person is a gazlan and you allow him to sit with other judges to adjudicate, nobody knows but you know. Now you've done nothing. He sits there, you've kept quiet, you've kept shtum. Says the Gemara, if you allow that to happen, or for instance, if you know that certain witnesses who are testifying in a lying fashion, and you say nothing, you are liable. In both of those cases. But not for lo sasa oval b'mishpot, and not for lo sana v'reichoid shoker. You are liable, says the Chasam Sofer, quoting the Gemara, because it says, midavar sheker tirchok. You shall distance yourself from lies, says the Chasam Sofer. Ve'ilu have kesiv lo sidaber sheker. And had the Torah say, you shall not speak a lie, then you would have been allowed to allow a gazlan to adjudicate. You would have been allowed to allow lying testimony to proceed. Because, as the Chasam Sofer said, when it says, lo, so-and-so, so-and-so, it implies that the only type of forbidden activity is the activity that you personally are involved in. But to sit by and let it go on, to let somebody rub out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, the prohibition is a lo sasa. I'm not allowed to do it, but to sit by and let somebody else do it, I'm not saying it's the sort of thing that you should allow to happen, but are you over on the lab of Mechikas Hashem? Answers, no. When you allow lies to take place and you don't intervene, then you transgress the prohibition, because the Torah didn't say don't lie. The Torah says, midavar sheker tirchok. Says the Chasam Sofer, comes to tell you that you are not even allowed to let a situation pertain where lies are taking place. Heve marvel lachkor es ha'edim, says the Mishnah, be careful to examine the witnesses. The heve zahir b'dvorecha, and be careful with the questions and remarks that you make to them. Shema mitocham yilmedu lishaker, lest as a result of your comments, they will find a means whereby they will lie. What's the transgression if I'm not careful? And they seize on a word and they turn out to lie using that word. Says the Gon, Shenemar, midavar sheker tirchok, you shall distance yourself from lies, min hagorein, even from any activity which might bring about a lie. So the Gon is saying the same as the Chasam Sofer. And a little bit of advice from the Sefer HaChassidim, which I am sure each and every one of you, including myself, will find of great practical benefit. V'zeh l'shon ha-Sefer HaChassidim v'simin top top reish tamach beis. All right, paragraph 1062. Im tireh b'nei adam, if you come upon people, shehei mislach Hashim, who are whispering to each other. V'yatoch ha-feitz lo das ma mislach Hashim, when you want to know what they're whispering to each other, al tishal lehem, don't ask. Penta seo some shakronim, lest you might cause them to lie. Famous words. She'ilo hoyu chafetim sheteda hoyu magidim loch. Because if they wanted you to know, they would tell you. Piyato shein chafetim sheteda. And it's obvious they don't want you to know. Is yagir loch sheker. Therefore they're going to lie to you. And it says midavar sheker tirchok. Don't allow anything that you say or do to bring about people lying. So we see here a most fascinating observation. min ha-Torah, unlike most other prohibitions in Torah, the prohibition is not merely against lying. The prohibition is to be the cause of other people lying, in which case you have violated a Torah prohibition. Midvar sheker tirchok. We leave it over here for this evening.